The rules of a game are meant to maintain fairness and mutual understanding so that the spirit of the game can be played out. The belief is that rules are in place to ensure a fair outcome desired by the majority. However, to every rule, even about rules, there are exceptions, as the Donald Trump presidential campaign may be about to learn. While a political convention is assumed to be the time and the place when the will of the party's voters is confirmed, that path of the nomination comes with a few bends in the road that my next guest says may already be in the works. He recently wrote about this for Bloomberg, with an article titled How to Steal a Nomination from Donald Trump. He's also a veteran political journalist and author. His latest book is Outpatients, The Astonishing New World of Medical Tourism. Say good morning to Sasha Eisenberg. Good morning, Sasha.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
And you can read Sasha's work over at Bloomberg.com and over at our website. We have a direct link to his recent articles, including the one that he's here to talk about. And when you do the math of the delegates, Sasha, you have Donald Trump with, at this point, 51-52% of the available delegates still out there is what he needs to get. Nice to see New Jersey be a relevant force in the primary this year, since it's a winner-take-all state. But even in the proportional states, you get half of the delegates just for winning, so that's really all that Trump has to worry about. Ted Cruz, 82-83%, pretty steep hill to climb. And let's see how the two drop out. There's no way John Kasich has a chance. But in spite of all that, there are rules in the book that they're already starting to cook with that could make a Trump win in the delegate counts almost basically irrelevant.
Yeah, you know, so whenever we sort of tally up these numbers of who has how many delegates, those are people who are bound to them usually about 90% of the total number of delegates are bound on the first ballot. So these are people who go in to Cleveland and are required, usually by their state party rules, to reflect the way that their state voted, whether, as you say, in a winner-take-all or a proportional contest. But they start to free up, depending on their state's rules, on the second ballot, on the third ballot, on the fourth ballot. So if nobody gets that majority, that 1,237 target isn't hit, people start to free up. And so they, all of a sudden, on those later ballots, they may come in as bound to Trump or Cruz or Kasich or whoever. Later on, they get some free will, and they can vote their conscience. They can start to cut a deal. They can start to shop around. We could, you know, even see somebody, people talk about Paul Ryan or Mitt Romney, come onto the scene who doesn't have any pledged delegates on the first ballot, but is able to sort of cobble together a new coalition as delegates become unbound.
And there are even some states, which you write about too, where the candidate who is winning the delegates, they don't, it's not their, the quote unquote, their people who are serving as the delegates.
Yeah, in most states, delegates, the actual delegates, the individual people who represent their states at the convention, aren't chosen at the same time as the actual primary or caucus. So people get allocated a number, but then later in, the individuals get filled into those slots. And often it's the apparatus of the state party, an executive committee, a convention at the county or the state level, that picks the individuals through their own processes. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk this year about the establishment. It might not be the establishment in Washington who's picking these people, but in many states, it's the establishment in the state capital. You have 31 Republican governors right now. Usually they have ruled their state parties with a heavy hand, and they have a lot of say over who the actual delegates will be.
So that's where the GOP establishment hope is resting then.
Yeah, in many cases. You know, I write about the example of South Carolina. On primary night, Donald Trump was awarded 50 out of 50 delegates. He's the first candidate in the modern Republican primary to win all of the available delegates in the state. And yet, the actual individual delegates are not selected until a state party convention in May. And so, and this is the amazing thing, at that state party convention in May, to run for delegate or to vote on who the national delegates will be, you had to have been a delegate to the state party convention last May, which was a month before Donald Trump began running for president. And so if you are, you know, an activist who has gotten really enthusiastic about Donald Trump's candidacy, but you're not a sort of Republican Party regular in South Carolina, you may have helped your guy win the state, but it is basically impossible for you to become a delegate to the convention. And so the people who are going to have the most influence over the 50 South Carolina delegates who go to Cleveland are going to be local politicians. It's going to be Nikki Haley, who has been very aggressively critical of Trump. She supported Rubio. She just switched over to Cruz. Tim Scott, who is a Rubio supporter, Lindsey Graham, who's a very aggressive Trump critic, they're going to have a lot more sway over those 50 supposed Trump delegates than Trump will. And so that could end up looking like a Trojan horse delegation. They go into Cleveland appearing to be unanimously for Trump, but by a second ballot, when those people can vote their conscience or cut a deal, all of a sudden you realize that there's absolutely no Trump support in their ranks.
So it was Sasha Eisenberg, who wrote for Bloomberg.com the article on how to steal a nomination from Donald Trump. He is also an author with his latest book, Outpatients, The Astonishing New World of Medical Tourism. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. And you didn't touch on this in the article, Sasha, but this kind of makes sense now of what's the value of Chris Christie to Donald Trump. And it's not because given his lack of popularity in his home state of New Jersey, but Christie was the head of the Republican Governors Association. So is Christie a bridge for Trump to the GOP establishment and get a little extra push and shoving going on?
I mean, that's a great point. You know, I mean, Iowa is a very good example. Christie became very close to Terry Branstad, who is a big critic of Ted Cruz's. Last weekend, while everybody else was focused on Ohio and Florida, winning the primaries there, the Cruz campaign was rather aggressively organizing at 99 county conventions in Iowa. And that is, again, a state party exercise where the governor's going to have a lot of sway. And so Christie, as a sort of locus of influence within the network of governors and, by extension, the state parties, can be a sort of agent of Trump's. You know, that becomes, though, a real bit of drudge work. You know, I think the question for Christie is he's obviously spending a lot of time by Trump's side and sort of basking in the role of sidekick. This stuff isn't the stuff that takes place below the radar requires a lot of attention to detail. And so, you know, Trump has begun sort of building up the apparatus within his campaign to pay attention to this, but he's definitely behind where Cruz is on this front and where Rubio was, and he's playing at a great disadvantage. A lot of it is ultimately going to be an intelligence gathering operation. Those 50 delegates from South Carolina that I mentioned, who are they as individuals? What's going to move them? What issues do they care about? Could they be persuaded by, you know, a hint that they could get an ambassadorship if they go with your candidate? Do they want to run for office one day and the promise that Chris Christie will go do a fundraiser for you is worthwhile? Is there a certain local politician who has an ability to influence them? That becomes a, you know, 2,500 people whose individual motives and incentives become really necessary for any campaign to develop an individualized strategy for winning them over.
Playing the game of hypotheticals, or maybe looking at it as a business person would do, you want to always be ahead of your competition in order to close the deal. Is it outrageous to think that Trump or maybe even Christie for representing Trump goes to John Kasich and says, John, look, the math of the matter, unless you're anointed, you're not getting it. And if you're anointed, you're certainly not going to be popular with tens of millions of voters. How does VP sound to you? What would that do to the whole works?
I think we definitely could be moving towards a situation where both Cruz and Trump see a desire to try to win over Kasich. The thing about unbound delegates is that, or bound delegates for that matter, is that they aren't tethered. Once their candidate stops campaigning, they aren't tethered to that person. And so Kasich has very little influence. If a month from now he decides that he's going to cut a deal with one of them and he's sitting on a couple hundred delegates at that point, he doesn't have the ability to bring them over en masse. The ones among them who are Kasich people, and there are states where the Kasich delegates will be Kasich people, they might listen to him. They might care what he says. Certainly the Ohio delegation, those are people who, you know, probably not only have great respect for what John Kasich thinks, but over whom he can have big influence going forward. He's still the sitting governor of a state. But in a bunch of places, Kasich's New Hampshire delegates, one of them is a state, an RNC committeeman who just got assigned to Kasich because of the way that the delegates were allocated on primary night. He doesn't have a particular loyalty to John Kasich. And so if Kasich were to cut a deal with either Trump or Cruz, that guy, Steve Dupree, the random new RNC committeeman in New Hampshire who is a Kasich delegate, isn't going to listen to what John Kasich tells him to do. He's going to, either care about which candidate he likes more or look out for who he thinks will be best for New Hampshire or cut a deal that's worthwhile to him personally. And so there's only so much ability for these sort of also-ran candidates to become power brokers, even of their own votes.
Yeah, that's when you thought the rules of the game were making things cut and dry. You can see all the gray areas and some of the wiggle room that exists. And there's a lot more that Sasha writes about. We've linked to the article directly over at our website. It's entitled How to Steal a Nomination from Donald Trump. And as you'll read, there are even more ways than what we talked about here over at Bloomberg.com. And check out his latest book, Outpatients, The Astonishing New World of Medical Tourism. Sasha, thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks, Chris. Good talking to you.